Mark Lamont Hill, since you're on with me live today, I assume you are not the running mate, but as I recall, you had a long streak as an independent voter, like what, 24 years?
That's right.
Why were you voting independent for so long? That's over two decades, man.
It's the choices.
Yeah.
You know, I just couldn't. I've been a Green Party member for a long time, but I never want to be beholden to any single party in terms of, as a black person, I got to always be strategic. Now, I will say, I voted Biden in 24, and that was the first time that I didn't make this choice.
Right.
And I did it because, I'm sorry, not in 24, in 20, excuse me. And I did it because I had no choice, man. The country was on fire. People were dying of COVID. And I just couldn't imagine another Trump presidency. I just couldn't imagine. I voted my fear more than my aspirations. But I had to do it. But I didn't vote Obama in 08. Yeah. I was one of the loudest voices saying, look, man, this ain't my brand of hope. You know, and the critiques that came of Obama later and the critiques that come of Biden are appropriate. I tell people to make the decision that's best for them, but make an informed one and never feel beholden to a party. That's sort of how I think about it.
Yeah.
But I can't wait to see who Cornell picked.
Yeah, we'll find out Wednesday all together on this program Wednesday.
Right. So it ain't you either then.
Say what?
So it ain't you either.
Oh, huh? Definitely not me. let me dispel those rumors right now. I think we can assume that it's not Tavis Smiley. I can tell you that. And it's not Mark Lamont Hill. I mean, although this could be a Jedi mind trick that Mark is faking me out by coming on today. He's back in his studio on Wednesday. I would die if he walked in here Wednesday. I said, Negro, exactly. you could have told me this 48 hours ago. You could have told me 48 hours ago. Anyway.
It's a gag order.
It's a gag order. So I assume it's not Mark Lamont Hill. I can assure you it is not Tavis Smiley. But we will find out who the running mate is. As you know, Bobby Kennedy, RFK Jr., announced his pick a few days ago. What did you make of that pick? It was clear to me, with all due respect to Mr. Kennedy, he was going for the money. It takes money to get on these ballots. He signed on a billionaire. So it's pretty clear what his motives were. But that's my read. What's your read?
Both things are correct. On the one hand, you know, you get a billionaire, it signifies that you're trying to make a splash.
Yeah.
You want to pay for the ads. You want to be out there in the world. You want to have some length and some strong legs for a long campaign run.
Yeah.
People like Ross Perot were able to do it because they had the money to do it. People like Bloomberg could have done it, but they were smart enough to know how to keep their money by not running too long.
Yeah.
But it's a strategic thing. The thing, though, to me is when you have billionaires running for office, I can't see you as a critical, radical, or even progressive left-wing voice. And, you know, a lot of people were out here, you know, praising Kennedy for telling the truth as it is. But when I see billionaire running mates, when I see supporting the military-industrial complex, particularly in Israel, and what's going on in Gaza right now, there's so many things that he says that are troublesome to me. If you're out there thinking about voting for him, to me, that's just to be opposite. That's just to be contrarian. Because if you want a corporate, you might as well vote for Biden and at least keep Trump out. Yeah. If you're going to vote for Robert Kennedy Jr., at least with Cornell West. Yeah, go ahead.
No. I didn't mean to cut you off. I hear your point. I was about to say when we come forward, Mark has already set this up nicely for me. There are a number of things he's already said that I want to interrogate, as is always the case with Mark Lamont Hill. First, he said he voted for Biden in 2020 because he felt that he had no choice. Well, that's the argument this year about why Cornell West and Bobby Kennedy shouldn't be running. That we really ain't got a choice. These guys are running at the wrong time. People feel they have no choice but to vote for Biden, and Cornell and Bobby Kennedy may mess things up. We'll talk about that. Mark talked earlier about voting out of his fear more than his aspirations. We'll talk about that. We've now reached the six-month mark with this conflict in the Middle East, still at an impasse, Israel and Hamas. Mark mentioned that. We'll interrogate that. Mark said earlier that he didn't vote for Obama the second time around. That wasn't his brand of hope. He got some pushback about that. You know I got pushback in the Obama era. We'll unpack that. And I can assure you of this. Cornell West running mate announced on this program Wednesday will not be Mark Lamont. Although Mark did not officially deny that. When we come forward, I'm going to ask him. I'm just going to ask him point blank. Are you the running mate? I denied it. Mark Lamont Hill did not deny it. But I can assure you this. His running mate will not be a billionaire. You're listening to Tavis Smiley.
You're listening to Tavis Smiley.
Tavis Smiley.
Ranked number 45 on the Heavy 100 list of the 100 most important radio talk show hosts in America. Yeah. May Fresh Daily in the Mert Park,
Los Angeles, California.
California. You're listening to Tavis Smiley.
Tavis Smiley and Mark Lamont Hill just getting started in this hour, talking all things politics and more, as is often the case, usually the case, when Mark Lamont Hill joins us, and I'm humbled once again to hear his voice on these airwaves. So, Mark, you said a few things I want to give you a chance to unpack. Let me go back first to 2020, when you said you voted for Joe Biden in that moment because you felt you had no choice. Everybody's using the same word, the same line in 2024, that Donald Trump represents an existential threat to our democracy. It's almost like that's a Democratic Party talking point, because everybody's using that same phrase. He is an existential threat to our democracy, although the phrase happens to be true. That said, for those who say, Mark, we ain't got no choice this time, that Cornel West and Bobby Kennedy and Jill Stein, anybody else out there running who we cast our votes for, is really a wasted vote, and it may usher Donald Trump back into the Oval Office. So you didn't have a choice in 2020. Again, folk are making that same argument in 2024.
I don't think it's a bad argument. But I do separate that argument from the wasted vote argument. There's no such thing as a wasted vote.
Mm-hmm.
The Democrats do not own us, and they don't own our vote.
Exactly.
And the logic that they do, even the subtle logic of where else we gonna go, is what allows them to be so wildly indifferent, if not oppositional, to our politics and our needs. They know we're going to vote. And if we are a captured electorate, then they'll never move toward our needs. They're going to move toward the needs of other people. And I refuse to allow independent voters, progressive voters, et cetera, to be the scapegoats or to be vote shamed for the failures of the Democratic Party to meet the needs of its base. For example, Joe Biden right now is losing votes every single day. I have a college student as a daughter who is like, Dad, I don't want Trump to be in office, but I'm standing here, and I every time I see what's happening in Gaza, it's hard, and Biden refuses to stop it. I can't, in good conscience, vote for him. Now, she and I are going to have some conversations, mm-hmm. but there's millions of voters out there who feel that way. And Biden could do the right thing, and that's just one example. Biden could do the right thing and keep those votes, but he's the one not willing to make the move. He's the one not willing to address policing properly. He's the one who's not willing to address reparations. He's the one who's not willing to address our issues. And then when he doesn't address our issues, we don't vote for him. They go, see, it's your fault, Donald Trump. I say, no, it's Biden's fault.
Mm-hmm.
It's the Democrats' fault. Mm-hmm. So I'm not blaming other people for making different choices. Now, for me, I'm making a pragmatic calculation here and saying that I still think the value of having a Supreme Court. I'm worried about Trump is an outlier. Tavis, you're right. Every year that we've been running, every year we've been alive, the Democrats say the sky's falling. If you don't vote for us, the devil himself is going to be president. They've been telling us that every time. But Trump is a different animal. Mm-hmm. That's all I can say.
Mm-hmm. No, that he is. But I love your phraseology of vote shaming. I've said many times on this program, I won't let people come on this program and use the word spoiler. You can say anything, but you can't use the word spoiler, because when the Democrats lose to the Republicans, they never call the Republicans spoilers. Well, they spoiled it for you. They won. You lost. It's only independent candidates who we call spoilers. And yet, I hear your point about pragmatism. But this notion of vote shaming just concerns me, because at the end of the day, again, as I said repeatedly, by the logic we hear every 4 years, certainly this year, there will never be a good time for a third party candidate.
And
I don't like that argument. And I've said before, with all due respect to my friend Cornel West and Bobby Kennedy, who I know, and Jill Stein, who I know, the Green Party is a little bit different. You voted for them for a lot of years. What I don't believe you can do is to jump in at the top level, at the top tier. You can't jump in, say, I'm running for president without building a third party. You have to build it. And you don't build from the top down. You build a skyscraper from the bottom up. And so I just think that every 4 years, when we have this conversation about independent candidates, and nobody has spent the prior 4 years building a platform, building a party, I don't think you're ever going to be ultimately successful if you're jumping in every 4 years quixotically at the presidential level race. Does that make sense to you?
It makes complete sense, and that's the tension that I currently have with the Green Party, who, again, these are my comrades, these are my friends, but I've said that to them repeatedly. We show up every 4 years, and we look like spoilers, because we could have won the Philly mayoral race.
Mm-hmm.
We could could have won the New York mayoral race. We could be in city councils around the country. We could be winning statewide elections. And the same way Republicans built their power base over the last 40 years by winning statewide elections, taking over houses, you know, that's how you build a base. That's what we should be doing. And then when people see Green Party, they won't think, oh, that's just them fools that's trying to, you know, they just want to get some attention every 4 years. And instead, they'll see us as an actual political movement. I was asked to run, I won't say which time, but I was asked to run for vice president of Green Party on someone's ticket. And I said no for a few reasons. One, you know, I ain't got enough money to be taking off work. In our line of work, you can't just not work. You know what I mean? I can't be in the media and run for president.
Yeah.
So I can't afford for this run. But more importantly, like, I need the people to see me and know that I did everything I could to build on other levels. I need people to know that I'm here for a long-term project. That's not my ministry. Mm. You know what I mean? But I think we should all, in the Green Party at least, I'm only going to speak for my party, we should all be thinking like that. Look, you want to put forward a candidate in 24? Fine. You know what I mean? That's you know. But I didn't have any hesitation not voting in 2020 for Green Party because I didn't feel like they'd earned my vote either.
Mm-hmm. No, that's fair. That's fair. Let me circle back to two other questions quickly about Cornel West, since we're talking, you're talking up in this moment at least, about your independent voting. One, I know you've been real slick about this. You did not expressly deny that you are not the running mate. You want to do that now, or you want to just?
I did not do that. You're right. That's a good observation. This is why you are an excellent journalist. This is why you are a brilliant mind. Yeah. I did not do that. That is correct.
Are you going to do that right now?
I think I want people to see what happens. This is not a politician. I'm gonna be like a politician there.
Okay.
I think we should start the process well. I'm to serve my country in any way possible.
Okay. Okay. That's a non-answer. We will see who shows up in this studio Wednesday. But I tell you, if this Negro walks in Wednesday, I'm gonna have a heart attack. So we will see. But to that point, one final thing about Dr. West. We'll move on since he's making his announcement here on Wednesday. Who his running mate is going to be? In case you just tuned in, I said that earlier. What kind of person? We saw who Bobby Kennedy picked. We know who Joe Biden's running with. Trump has yet to announce his running mate. Not that it matters or that we care, but he hasn't announced it as yet. Or that it makes a difference for that matter. But what kind of person in this moment do you think Cornel West should pick?
I'm thinking an African-American male professor who has a YouTube channel. let me stop messing with y'all. I ain't going to be nobody running mate. I'd like to see a woman. I don't want to set Cornell up, but I would be surprised if he didn't choose a woman. I'd be shocked if he didn't choose a woman.
Okay.
First of all,
okay.
I think we need to see some gender balance on these tickets. But I also think, more importantly than just the identity politics of it, I think you're going to see somebody who probably has an activist background, but maybe someone who, and I'd be interested to see if you could get somebody who has an activist background and a grassroots background, but also maybe has some government experience. Like, for example, if you picked a Nina Turner type, I could live with that. That's the kind of person. I'm not saying it's going to be her. I have no idea.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the kind of person I would like to see. Mm-hmm. Now, he may choose a white person, right? You know, because there's some grassroots or leftist white people that still feel more comfortable when there's white people on the when there's white people on a diet. So I wouldn't shock me, but I'd like to see a woman, and I'd like to see someone with some grassroots and some government experience.
Yep. So my thought about this is simply this. At this point in the process and the way the game is played out, we see that Bobby Kennedy chose somebody. He went for the money. We discussed that earlier, because it takes money to get on these ballots in these states. So either Dr. West has to choose somebody similarly who has a lot of money. I can't see that happening, just given his critique of, you know, corporatism in this country. But there are those who do have money who happen to be more left-leaning in their politics. So it's got to be somebody, to my mind, who has some money, like Bobby Kennedy's choice, or somebody who is uniquely connected. You keep using the phrase grassroots. I wouldn't argue that. But it's got to be somebody who has access to a lot of people, somebody that can help him generate some energy, maybe even amongst young people. But it's got to be one or the other, Mark. Either they got to bring a bunch of money, or they got to bring some connections. Does that make sense?
I think that makes sense. And now the question is, who energizes young people that's either going to leave the Democratic Party or is already in the grassroots?
Right.
And those answers for me are usually celebrities. And I just don't know if you want an all celebrity ticket, because I think that. So you know, I wish that there were a you know how, like, back in the day, like Ron Paul and then Rand Paul came along, and Rand was more mainstream, but people loved the leftists. The righties loved Ron Paul. He was if he had ever walked out of the Republican Party and said, I'm going to run third party for president, he'd have a lot of energy because he spoke to certain people's kind of libertarian impulses. Like Dennis Kucinich was kind of that for us back in the aughts. There are people like that. I just don't know if any of them are young enough and compelling. Mm-hmm. And a Bernie would be the kind of person, right, mm-hmm. who young people seem to worship. But, you know, I don't know if there is one of those around anymore. So Nina Turner, as I'm saying it out loud, might not be the one. And again, I don't know nothing.
Yeah. No, I hadn't even thought about Nina Turner. I've been discussing this with myself for the last couple of days, and I hadn't even thought about Nina Turner, but that's a great suggestion. She'd be, if I were Cornel West, she'd be on my short list. And so I like that idea. Well, anyway, we'll find out. We'll find out Wednesday. In the first hour of this program, Dr. West will join us with his running mate, and we'll all find out together at that time. I'm watching my clock here. For the next few minutes, I want to look back, and then we'll spend the rest of this hour, the last half hour, looking forward. And by looking forward, I'm talking about the fact that we've now arrived at the six-month mark of this war between Israel and Hamas. The impasse is yet in place, never mind the ceasefire vote by the UN. Things continue to escalate. We'll get Mark's take on that and a few other things. But what I want to go back to right quick, though, as I said before I go forward, is this idea that you shared earlier, not idea, your story that you shared earlier about not voting for Obama the second time around because what he was doing did not represent your brand of hope. You realize that even today, that's still heresy. It's heresy to say you did not vote for Barack Obama in his second campaign. Obviously, we both know. You know,
I didn't vote the first one either. Now, to be clear, I didn't vote the first one either.
Okay, so but you realize that's heresy in Black America.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Ooh, Negro's still mad at me.
Yeah.
You know, when I ran for him, I voted for Cynthia McKinney and Rosa Clemente in 2008 for the Green Party. Mm-hmm. And I remember people were outraged. You know, some people were outraged just that I didn't vote for Hillary. Then they said, didn't Obama look like the heir apparent? Okay, we got to vote for him. I said, no. And I wrote a piece actually in The Root, and that's when The Root first came out. That's when Skip Gates was still like overseeing it directly. Mm-hmm. And I wrote a piece called "Not My Brand," called "Not My Brand of Hope" in 2008. And people were furious. The managerial class, the bourgeois class, all the people that be in them circles, they was mad because they were so excited to have a potential black president.
Sure.
I just couldn't do it, man. I saw his vision of economic policies. I saw his foreign policy. I said, this looks just like Clinton, mm-hmm. who we had all stood up on the left, the so-called left, and raged against. We all said, oh, Clinton is a centrist. Clinton is doing this. Clinton is doing that. And then we had an opportunity to have a Democrat back in office. Mm-hmm. They brought back another Clinton, you know, with mm-hmm. some differences in certain ways, some better, some worse. But fundamentally, this wasn't a radical alternative, and that's what I wanted. I thought this was an opportunity to reimagine what was possible.
Yeah. So what's funny about it, I'm laughing inside, but not outside. Well, now I'm laughing outside. I caught more hell than anybody I know during that eight-year period.
For sure.
And I did vote for Obama twice. Mark Lamont Hill says he didn't, and y'all didn't go after him when you came after me for that eight-year period. But here's the point. I voted for Obama twice. And I did it the first time, but again, for me, the alternative of Romney at one point and McCain at the other point didn't really make sense to me, and I could have considered the Green Party as you did, but I voted for him for one simple reason, not because I thought he was the best candidate, per se, but because I hoped that his being elected would unleash progressive possibilities.
Yeah.
So as my friend Mike Dyson would say, he was on this program a couple of days ago, Dyson would say, there's a difference between Willie Mays and Jackie Robinson, right? There's a difference between the two. And so his thing was that you got to vote for one sometimes to get to what you really want. And so my view is and was that maybe voting for him will unleash progressive possibilities, but you and I both agree on this in the aftermath, it really didn't. It did not unleash progressive possibilities. He did not have black coattails. Jesse Jackson had more coattails in 84 and 88 than Barack Obama had in 2008 or 2012. He just had no black coattails. You can't show me a bunch of black folk who got elected across the country, as I could show you in 84 and 88, people who got elected because of Jesse's run. Obama didn't have that in either of his campaigns. So I hoped it would release progressive possibilities. It did not. Let's talk about that part before we move forward. When we come forward on Tavish Smiley with Mark Lamont Hill.
truth, speaking the truth. This is the Tavis Smiley Show. Let's get back to more of this rich dialogue with Tavis Smiley.
Tavis Smiley and Mark Lamont Hill. Mark, there's a whole lot of stuff coming at me. I've got my own questions I teed up a moment ago that I want to ask you. I'm seeing all kind of responses from listeners of things they want me to ask you. I see breaking news right about now, and I don't mean the solar eclipse either. There is breaking news. Donald Trump has indicated that he will sue the judge overseeing his Manhattan criminal case in a last-ditch attempt to delay prosecution. Reading now from the New York Times, Mr. Trump's unorthodox move, essentially an appeal in the form of a lawsuit, is unlikely to succeed, particularly so close to trial. But Donald Trump announcing he is going to sue the judge in this Manhattan case brought by the brother DA Alvin Bragg to stop this thing or to slow it down just a little bit longer. So run out this clock, Mark Lamont Hill.
That's what he tried to do, man. The man is resourceful, and he's getting desperate. I don't think it's going to work. I think he will have exhausted all of his legal options. But here's the thing, you know, he's going to be found guilty. But more importantly, more interestingly to me, I don't think it matters to almost any voters who are considering voting for him.
Yeah, that part. Nope, I think you're right.
That's the scary part.
Nope, you're right. I said that before on this program. What does all this really matter ultimately? If they find him guilty on a couple different things and a couple different trials, and it doesn't prevent him from running for president, and it doesn't really matter to his voters. I don't know what the end game ultimately is. But anyway, there's your breaking news that Donald Trump is going to sue the judge in New York to slow down, or stop, or try to avert this Manhattan trial. I argue with Mark and all the experts I'm reading right quickly, who are opining, suggest the same thing, that this close to trial is probably not going to work. But he is resourceful, to quote Mark Lamont Hill, and he's creative. He's resourceful and creative. And so we will see what happens with this lawsuit in the days ahead. But there's your breaking news. Before I get to the Obama question that I posed before the break about progressive possibilities, and namely why I voted for him for those two terms, a couple things from listeners, Mark. Excuse me. Would Mark Tavis have voted differently over the years if he was voting in a swing state? That's the first of two questions I want to pose to you right quick, Mark Lamont.
Well, I vote in Pennsylvania.
That is a swing state.
So, I think Hillary lost by 10 votes here.
Yeah.
I might have literally been a deciding vote, me and my family. You know what I mean? So, yeah. So, no.
Yeah. There's that answer. There's that answer. And speaking of swing states, we are told, Mark Lamont Hill, you read the same stuff I'm reading. We are told by the political experts, by the pundits, by the poll watchers who cover these campaigns, that this election really will ultimately come down to, we are told, about 3 million voters in 6 or 7 swing states. So I keep joking, maybe all of our votes are wasted, minus those 3 million people in those 6 or 7 states. How do you read that notion?
Well, two things. One, I think it's going to be tight. And I think, again, this is why Biden ignoring Michigan voters, those Arabs in Dearborn that you think don't matter that much because there's only a few hundred thousand votes, they may be the difference between winning Michigan and losing Michigan, which might be the difference between winning the presidency and losing the presidency.
Oh, yeah.
So the same way he's standing up with them union lines and being lunch pail Joe when it's time to go to Virginia and Ohio, you know what I mean? You might have to be Abdul Yahya or something when you go up to Michigan.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? If you want to win this thing. I think there's a frustration I think that people have that it always comes down to these places. But that's, again, why I think it's important to vote your conscience. I do think we can be strategic, though. One of the things I told people when I did vote for Jill Stein in 2016 was, let's vote trade. You know, if you're in California, you're safe. You can vote for anybody you want, and the outcome going to be the same. If I'm in Texas, I can vote whoever I want. Outcome going to be the same. But maybe, you know, but so what you do is you trade your vote with a comrade who's in a state where they can't afford to do that. And you know, like Pennsylvania, et cetera. That way the Green Party or whoever still gets its base. Because the truth is, we know the Green Party is not going to win the presidency. But what we can do is get enough. If we get a slice of the vote, then we get a slice of the federal funding, which then allows us to mount a campaign in the future. You can do that if you secure your votes in safe states. So there's ways to still get your vote heard and your voice felt without yeah. are compromising a swing state if that's something you care about.
Speaking of Green Party, another quick question here. We'll move forward. What does it mean for the Green Party, Mark, if enough people in safe states get their candidate 5% in terms of campaign financing and building a movement?
That's exactly where I'm going with. That's exactly my point. We need the 5%, because until you get the 5%, you can't compete with the big dogs, right? Mm-hmm. But you can't, you know, and if you can't compete with the big dogs, then people say, well, why are you voting? So it becomes like a cycle. So that's why, again, I think it's important for us to build the Green Party. But again, let's build it slow. Let's build it local. Let's build it regional. But also, even when we do the national elections, we should really commit to vote trading or to targeting states that we can't lose, no matter, you know what I mean? Like Omar and Mawar said, even if I miss, I can't miss, right?
Yeah.
Like, let's organize in California.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let's get all the Democrats in Texas. You know, that's how I would be thinking about it if I were in charge, but I'm not.
Yep, fair enough. To the point that we were discussing earlier about why I voted for Obama those two terms and why you did not, you stated your case, and my case simply is I voted for him not because I thought he was right on all the issues, but because I hoped, at least, that his election, his ascent, would open up progressive possibilities. It did not do that to my mind. How do you read it?
The same way. The same way. I hoped that in 2012 he would have proved me wrong and given me enough ammunition to vote for him in 12, and I didn't see it. And you're right. I mean, I don't think you did the wrong thing, because, I mean, again, if you made a tactical decision as well, that, look, even with him as a milquetoast liberal, he's still better than McCain. Mm-hmm. He's still better than Romney. Mm-hmm. That ain't a bad argument. What I disagree with is the people who say, well, you know, he couldn't do nothing the first time because he's just getting in there. And then the next time, I'll tell you something. As a professor, there are professors who don't have tenure, who are cowardly. They won't speak up on any issues. And then everybody says, but when I get tenure, I'm going to be a different person. And I've been a professor now for, the time be moving, man. I've been a professor now for 19 years since I got my PhD. And in 19 years I've been a professor, every single person that was cowardly before they got tenure, after they got the tenure, the next thing was, well, but I want to get promoted to full professor. Then it was, well, but then I need an endowed chair. And, you know, and if I speak out now, then I won't be department chair.
Yeah.
And it's always a reason to be a punk.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
To be a coward.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the president's always got a reason why they can't. Well, if I do that, then I'll lose the Congress. Oh, if I do that, then the next, you know, there's always a reason. You are who you are when you showed up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so I don't, and that doesn't mean you can't be strategic and tactical and you can't wait and be patient. I get all of that. I'm not naive, but I saw nothing about Obama that would make me think that he was going to, in the fourth quarter, do anything different than he was going to do in the first quarter.
Yeah.
You know, and that's unfortunate. I mean, I'm going to just give you one example and I'll tell you, it frustrated me. I've been working on the release of political prisoners for a very long time. They're trying to get old Panthers out, people who got way too long a sentence. I went to, we did it on the federal level to the White House, and we also did it at the gubernatorial level in New York with the brother, he was blind.
David Patterson. Yeah.
I remember going to Patterson the same way and said, look, you're only going to be governor for 6 months. There are some black people here who are in prison who got railroaded as Black Panthers who you could get out right now. You can even delay their release to 2 or 3 years from now when you're not governor no more. And his answer was, no, it'll ruin my political career. I'm like, bro, you are a black man governor who got appointed here. You know what I mean? In New York, you ain't got no political future except to run in Harlem, maybe for Adam Clayton, you know, for the Adam Clayton Powell seat, for Charlie Rangel seat.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to him, I said, look, I said, there's no way Harlem is going to punish you for letting a bunch of Negroes out of jail.
Mm.
You'll be fine. But even in that situation... even in that situation, they're so beholden to the status quo and to the power structure. Even he ain't had nothing to lose, but he still wouldn't do it. They just won't do it. They just won't act right. You know, if when you're in that maze, it's hard.
No, it takes a lot to be courageous politically. And
yes.
You're right about the fact that when people get in, they keep moving the post, right? That's my problem. They keep moving the post. Well, this and well, this and well, this. Okay, I'm not trying to hear that. Our guest is Mark Lamont here. When we come forward, we'll talk about the fact that we have now arrived at the six-month mark of this conflict, this war between Israel and Hamas. We'll get his take on that and a few other things before I lose him at the top of the hour. A few more minutes left here with Mark Lamont Hill on Tavis Smile.
Hope, agency, dignity. This is Tavis Smiley.
Can you dig it?
Sounds different. Huh? This is Tavis Smiley.
I'm looking at all these messages, Mark Lamont Hill, that are saying in a variety of ways, I'm in lockstep with Dr. Hill. I'm in lockstep with Dr. Hill. So you got folk who understand your point of view and are in agreement with you. Let's see if they're in agreement with you on this point. And that is, you know where I'm going, right? Let's see if they agree this. Let's see if you can get with that, but can you get with this? This is the war between Israel and Hamas. No laughing matter here. We've now reached the 6-month mark, and this conflict is still at an impasse, never mind this ceasefire vote, which was cheered in the UN. Your thoughts about this war 6 months in, unabated?
This is one of the cruelest things I've ever seen. You know, again, there are other things happening that deserve our attention. And the great thing is that people like you, Tavis, cover Haiti. You talk about Congo. You talk about Sudan. You know, I never want to isolate Israel-Palestine as a single issue because it speaks to a bigger problem of imperial power. And what happens when the West dominates. But what we're seeing right now in Gaza is one of the cruelest things I have ever seen. As of last night, I think it's 33,000, over 33,000 people have been killed, not counting the 8,000 who haven't been identified, but they're under the rubble. So we're looking at over 40,000 people dead, 78,000 wounded, 112 wells destroyed, which is part of the dehydration problem. Every university destroyed, 70% of the overall physical environment of the construction, the buildings in Gaza have been destroyed. 1.7 million out of 2.2 million people are unhoused at this point. 1% of all children in Gaza have been murdered, have been killed. Mm. And I could give you 15 other stats like that are just as harrowing. And the point at the end of this is it could stop tomorrow. The United States could stop this tomorrow. I'm not blaming the U.S. for Israel's actions per se, mm-hmm. but the U.S. could stop this tomorrow. Joe Biden could stop this tomorrow. And all Joe Biden wants to do is look like he's tough on this issue by doing press leaks of the president is cursing Netanyahu out behind his back, and the Biden is pissed off at Netanyahu, but they're still sending them money. We're about to send them probably $14 billion more. There was a ceasefire call at the U.N. 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, that was vetoed by the United States, because as a permanent member, we can veto anything. So basically, the U.S. is enabling Israel's behavior, and Israel is making it very clear that this isn't about a war on Hamas. This is a war on the Palestinian people. This is a genocide. This is ethnic cleansing, and this is indefensible and disgusting.
Our remaining moments with Mark Lamont Hill. Got to get him to come out of his shell, stop being so passive, and tell us what he really thinks. You're listening to Tavis Smiley.
What's your quarrel with the world? You're listening to Tavis Smiley. Ready to re-examine your assumptions and expand your inventory of ideas? More of Tavis Smiley coming your way right now.
More of Mark Lamont Hill coming your way right now, at least for the next 4 minutes. 4 minutes I have left in this hour with him. Always delighted to have him on this program. We discussed some breaking news regarding Donald Trump earlier in this hour, and that is that Donald Trump, we are told, is going to sue the judge in Manhattan to try to, again, slow down this trial, try to avert this trial and run out the clock. So he's going to sue the judge in Manhattan in the case brought by the black DA, Alvin Bragg. This is the Stormy Daniels porn case that he's trying to slow down. We will see what happens in the coming days if and when he sues the judge. But that is the story about Donald Trump. Now to Joe Biden. In these last 3 minutes with Mark Lamont Hill, there's some breaking news there. President Biden announces today his plan to cancel student debt, Mark Lamont Hill, for more than 30 million Americans by this fall, kicking off, of course, an election year sprint to deliver on this promise he made a while ago that was thwarted the first time around by the U.S. Supreme Court. You couple that with a major story out today. I was reading earlier that some colleges in the next next school year will start charging as much as $100,000 per year. Some of these schools now, how that price has even risen to $100,000 per year, I don't understand. But that's what we're up against. So on the one hand, there are colleges now, they're going to be charging $100,000 a year or better on the one side. And on the other side, president trying to relieve student debt for 30 million people before this clock runs out. On this issue, your thoughts about all of that?
I think it's a wonderful idea. I'm excited by it. I think this one may survive the legal challenges. You're talking about 25 million borrowers is something significant. it's going to be a narrower base. So I just want people to know that, you know, he has to target specific groups of borrowers in order for this to work, and specifically those facing financial hardship. And I know a whole everybody listening, like, look, I got financial hardship. If you got loans, you got financial hardship. But it's going to be a much higher threshold in order to survive the legal challenges that they faced before. So I don't know how many people this will actually touch, but it's the right thing to do as you go into a strategically as you go into a presidential run. So it'll be exciting to see what happens. But we need more than that. We need a radical political vision. We shouldn't be paying for, I mean, private education is one thing, but we shouldn't be paying significant amounts of money for public universities. Anyway, universities should be free.
And that's being said by a professor for almost 20 years now. Let me close on this note. I got about a minute to go. I wonder whether or not you think in the long run this will aid and abet Joe Biden. I tied this this move today, of course. It's all election season stuff. He's going to be doing everything he can, obviously, as he should, to win this election. I don't know what impact this will have on voters, no matter how young they may be, that he's relieving certain student loan debt. But at this point, how are you feeling about the campaign that Joe Biden is running?
I think he is running the same old classic campaign of look at me, look at him, look at me, look at him, and hoping that people will be so afraid that they'll vote their, again, they'll vote their fears and not their dreams or their aspirations. And I think it might work, you know, between Trump's messiness, between the lawsuits and some of these moves that Biden's making. It might be a successful campaign, but it's not good for our democracy. It's not good for liberation. It's not good for justice.
Yep. Beautifully said, brilliantly said. Eloquently said, as is always the case when Mark LaMania opens his mouth. Honored to have you on, as always. Check out his YouTube channel, Mark Lamont Hill Official. That's where you find it, Mark Lamont Hill Official. He does some great work on his YouTube channel. I love checking him out there and love having him on this program here. Mark Lamont Hill, all the best to you, my friend. Talk to you soon.
Love you, brother.
Love you back, man. Nothing you can do about it. More of Tavis Smiley when we come forward.